Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, The Extreme You. Our guest today is Sarah Robb O'Hagan, the author of Extreme You, Step Up, Stand Out, Kick Ass, Repeat, a book to unleash potential. In today's teleclass, Sarah will teach you methods to get more out of yourself. She will walk you through how to develop the big traits you need if you want to be an extremer. These include how to ignite your personal drive, how to deal with failure, and the importance of pain training on your road to epic success. Before we begin, we want to let you know that Sarah will be going through a slide deck for today's teleclass. You should have received a link to download the presentation when you registered. If you did not, and you still need to download the presentation, please go to your conference website, click on the Resources tab, and then scroll down and click on Teleclasses. You'll see a download link there. And now let's get started. Sarah Robb O'Hagan, welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass.
Hi, it's great to be here. Okay, ladies, we're going to have some fun today. I hope you've had a moment to download the PDF presentation. So I'm just going to tell you what page I'm on as I'm going along and going to try and have some fun today, tell some great stories and hopefully impart some good lessons. So my presentation today is called Extreme You, Step Up, Stand Out, Kick Ass, and Repeat, because that's what we all want to do, right? But I think it's always helpful to have you guys know, well, who am I? Why are you listening to this crazy lady with an accent? So if you go to page two, I'm actually from New Zealand, if any of you have heard of that amazing country at the bottom of the world. And it's actually one of the most beautiful places on the planet. So you may go, why did I leave New Zealand? Well, if you click to page three, that gives the story away. It is a country of 5 million people and 50 million sheep. Did you hear that? 50 million sheep. That means when you're growing up there, it's kind of hard to stand out from the crowd, you know? At any rate, it's an interesting place to have grown up because it informed a lot of my leadership style and lessons that I'm going to share with you today. If you click to page four, you'll see New Zealand is a country that is passionate about sport. In 1984, the Olympics happened in Los Angeles, California, and I remember as a young child watching our team score the most medals we had ever achieved in our country's history. We got 8 golds, 3 silvers, and 2 bronze, which is amazing for us. Now, what was the most interesting about those victories is every sport that we competed in and won was a sport that involved sitting down. Think about that for a second. How funny is that? Look at the pictures on this slide. Kayaking, rowing, horse riding, sailing, cycling, every sport involved sitting down. And that's kind of weird, but when you think about it, it was a really specialist approach that our country took to being able to beat the big guys on the world stage. So if you click to page five, what I believe I learned from this is if you aim for oversized achievement in your life, in your career, you have to be willing to go to extremes. Just like those little underdog Kiwis who did so well on the world stage, you have to figure out what is your unique specialty that you're going to be better than anybody else at. And it starts with a really strong foundation of you. If you want to break through as an individual and truly kick ass and outperform everyone around you, you have to be what I call extreme you. And how do you do that? Well, you start by building the strong foundation of truly knowing who you are, what you stand for, and where you shine. So if you click to page seven, to live extreme you is to operate at the edge of your potential. What do I mean by that? It means to constantly be pushing boundaries to a new future that you cannot see and to create capabilities to stay ahead even when you can't know they're going to work. And how do you do that? Well, being extreme you means by definition that you're not actually terribly well-rounded. It means it's important to understand your incredible shining strengths and, frankly, your mortifying weaknesses. What are those things that you're just not good at? And understand how to surround yourself with the best teammates to get the most out of yourselves together. So that's really what Living Extreme You is all about. It's all about understanding you at your best, and then every time you get comfortable and get really good at what you're doing, you push yourself out and take on a bigger challenge to get to the next level of your own potential. So with that in mind, I'm actually going to share with you today three key lessons that I have learned over my research in the last 3 years that extraordinarily successful people do to achieve that success. And these people are what I call extremers. And the first one, page 8, is what I call check yourself out. And this is probably the most fun one of all. The first rule in becoming a bona fide extremer is knowing who you are and where you shine. So if you click to page 9, I thought I'd share a funny story from my childhood. I grew up wanting to be a champion. I was absolutely certain I was going to be world class at something. If you look on the left side of the page, I wanted to be Tina Turner. Who didn't want to be Tina Turner? I mean, come on. Like, she was filling stadiums. That's what I wanted to be. But unfortunately, I never got picked for school choir solos. I thought I could be a world-class skier. But the closest I ever got to stardom was I went to primary school with a girl who got an Olympic medal. I was sure my moment was arriving when I tried out to be Sandy in our high school production of Grease. Do you guys remember Grease? But I didn't even make the pink ladies. I was in the section of the chorus that didn't even belong on the stage. So I basically felt for most of my life that I pretty much sucked. And if you go to page 10, what you'll find is that I actually have now discovered I wasn't alone. To be extreme you is to create your own playing field. Look at the amazing images of great people on this slide. Over the last 3 years of writing my book, I've interviewed 23 of the most successful people in the world. You see on the slide, Sam Cass, the White House chef, Condoleezza Rice, a former Secretary of State, Ali Webb, who's the founder of the Dry Bar. Ladies, who doesn't love getting their hair done at the Dry Bar? Or in the top right, Mr. Cartoon, who's one of the most famous tattoo artists in the world. And what I heard from pretty much all of them is that they never knew early on that they were destined for this huge, huge success. Take Angela Ahrendts. Do you guys know Angela? She's actually the head of retail for all of Apple and the former CEO of Burberry. And she is, according to Forbes magazine, the 14th most powerful woman in the world. Yet when I interviewed her about her formative life experience, she told me she just didn't feel that smart. She said, "I was a rock-solid B student." So how did she go on to have the extraordinary achievements that she did? By checking herself out. She tried on all sorts of different experiences to discover where she was incredibly successful and where she had the most fun. And though in her high school she struggled with the extreme linear left brain analytical subjects, and she also struggled with the extreme right brain subjects, like languages, she just didn't know where she would thrive. But through her own process of trying different jobs and roles, as she says, she was incredibly blessed to stumble upon fashion, an industry that was more balanced and tapped into both her right and left brain, which was the way she was wired, bringing together in equal parts the best parts of her natural talents. She explored many roles from marketing to strategy and business, unlocking different parts of her experience as she went, and eventually discovering she would thrive as a CEO and general manager in industries that harnessed innovation and creativity. What an awesome, awesome story. I mean, this is not someone who immediately knew in their 20s or their 30s where they were going to be the best, but by trying out lots of different things, found their way there. So page 11, what I think is important for all of us to know is the system is designed to make you fit in. Most of us have been raised in societies that like to put us into neat little boxes. But when we do that, we often end up looking and feeling really average. Look at my experiences from childhood. I thought I could be a singer. I thought I could be a skier. All these linear, vertical boxes, and I didn't do terribly well. So what about you? Are you intellectual? Are you a data geek? Are you good at art and creative? Are you a great singer or an actress? Are you a great athlete? For the very lucky few of us who are absolutely amazing at one of these things, you might go on to become famous and brilliant in one simple box. So let's say we're Serena Williams and we happen to have extraordinary talent at one thing like tennis. But for most of us, it requires defining the box on your own. Most of us actually have a unique set of interests and characteristics that if we could just really play them to their full potential, we could be absolutely world class. So if you flip to the next page, let me bring it to life for you. In my case, It took me years of wins and losses to discover my own unique combination of skills. I was drawn to the airline business because I love to travel and I'm a huge explorer. I was drawn to the sports business not because I was a good athlete, as we've just learned, but because I love sports and I'm incredibly competitive. And I was drawn into a marketing career because I've always been very, very creative. Again, wasn't destined to be a singer, but I had a creative brain. So it's no surprise now when I look at where my career went and where I really thrived, that the places where I did best brought all together those specialist skills. And I created my own game of being world-class at innovation and competitive creativity in the sports and fitness industries. So the lesson overall is check yourself out. You cannot read in a textbook or Google what your unique specialties are. You have to get out there and try different things. And when you do, like Angela did, like I did, you'll start to see where you really thrive, where you really feel yourself come to life, and you'll be able to play at your very best. Okay, going on to slide 13. Rule number 2, ignite your magic drive. So the second rule in becoming a great extremer is knowing how to trigger your internal engine that drives you and enables you to outwork others around you. We've all met people that we would describe as highly driven. And if you read books such as Grit by Angela Duckworth, who's one of my fellow extremers that I interviewed, you will know, like I do, that drive and determination is a far greater predictor of success than raw talent. So where does that drive come from, and how do you light that internal fire within yourself? It starts with taking your life and career into your own hands, not waiting for others to open up opportunities for you, but instead making them happen for yourself. Slide 14. So let me give you my first real example of igniting my magic drive. As I explained, I was pretty damn average all through school, all through college. Then I had the opportunity to get my first job coming out of college, and I wanted to work for a company called Air New Zealand. You see the airplane on the page. So I went and took all the tests that you had to do as a new graduate wanting to get into the internship program, and I epically failed them. And I got home, and I got a letter in the mail that said, "You're rejected. You're not going to be working here." But here's the thing. I just knew that those tests had not brought to life my unique passions and experiences and my deep, deep desire to work for Air New Zealand and travel the world and represent my airline and my country in an interesting way. So instead of just going, okay, this sucks, I'm not going to get the job, and frankly taking another job that I had been offered, I said, no, I'm not taking no for an answer. And I went back to the hiring lady and I said, here's the reasons why you have to give me 20 more minutes just to get into an interview with the hiring manager. And here's the thing. I managed to get in the door, and because I'd done tons of research on the airline and combined it with my unique passions, knowledges, and skills, I was able to reframe this very analytical hiring process and turn it to a right brain process that suited me better and really enable myself to get the job by convincing how my unique skills were going to take the role and the team forward. And the lesson in this, if you click to page 15, is that with more of you on the line, you will push much harder to succeed. Here's the really cool part of the story. There were 6 internships at Air New Zealand, and they created a whole extra role for me because I had done such a good job of convincing them that they needed to hire me. That's cool in and of itself, but what was the better part of the story is because the hiring HR lady and the hiring manager had made so much effort to accommodate me, my God, I worked harder than anyone else around me to make sure I didn't let them down, to make sure I proved to them that they'd made the right decision, because I'd really put myself on the line and put myself out there to get the role. So the lesson is, how do you ignite your internal magic drive? Put everything you've got on the line and really go after the things you care about the most. Okay, page 16, my last and most favorite lesson for the day is don't be scared of pain training. When I look back to earlier in my career, I realize now I was incredibly scared of failure. And interestingly enough, every generation in America today becomes statistically less likely to take risks than the generation before them. But I realize now that it's incredibly limiting to think that way. For me, by far the most transformational springboards in my career have actually been the really epic, painful fails. Page 17. So after my awesome start at Air New Zealand that I just described to you, I went on to work with Virgin Atlantic Airways in my late 20s. It was awesome. I was rocking it out, partying with Richard Branson at the Cannes Film Festival when I was 26 years old. Things were amazing. So much so that I thought I was pretty unstoppable. I made a jump and moved to the sister company Virgin Megastores without thinking too much about the fact I had no experience in music retail. And at the time, the entire industry was imploding thanks to the advent of free music like Napster. To cut a very long story short, I went from being at the top of my game to being a clueless rogue force on the Virgin Megastores team. I lacked the humility to learn from the tenured employees around me. I wasn't able to have impact with my ideas because of my sheer lack of understanding of the business. And frankly, I was leading a bunch of rabble-rousing. What ended up happening? I got fired. Epically, embarrassingly fired. I was given a one-week severance and a one-way ticket to New Zealand, and I had 3 months to figure out how not to get deported from the USA because they had canceled my visa and green card application. It sucked, and let me tell you, I can go into great detail about how mortifying the experience is of getting your job, of losing your job. Page 18, if that wasn't bad enough, things got even worse. I took the first job I could to stay in America, leading marketing for the video game publishing company Atari, completely overlooking the fact that I hate video games, don't understand them, didn't want to understand them, and was unable to build any kind of understanding in the role. And as a result, my 2-year stint in that business ended up with me getting laid off. Yep, you heard me. Twice in the space of 2 years, I was laid off and fired. So a few months of soul-searching, eating humble pie, and dissecting what I'd done wrong made me so freaking determined to come back stronger. And it's true that I failed. It's true that in a world of linear career progression, the risks that I took to try out new environments ended with disastrous results that made me feel like I was at best treading water and at worst going backwards. But what I didn't realize at the time was that the massive back-to-back failures actually became the greatest personal trainer of my life. They taught me the humility I needed to learn and grow in new environments, and most importantly, the resilience to never give up and realize that no matter how bad the failure, I would always be able to rebound. They ultimately enabled me to spring much further forward with the confidence and learnings that I had taken from them. Page 19 is one of my favorite stories. One of the people I interviewed for my book was Bodie Miller, who's the internationally well-known downhill skier, probably the best American downhill skier of all time. And he has taught me more about failure than any other person I've spoken to. Because I met him when we were both, when I was at Nike and he was an athlete that we were sponsoring and he was at the Torino Olympics. And what he has taught me is that when he was a kid, he was training to be a skier and was constantly coming in like 35th in the races that he was participating in. And that was because he just wasn't as physically strong and big as the other skiers around him. So he realized, if I'm going to start winning, I'm going to have to play my own game. And he decided the way to do that was in training. Instead of incrementally improving his performance each time, he would push to the extremes, even if it meant that he crashed a whole lot more. And trust me, he did. Constantly clipping gates, falling over, pushing the edges, and crashing more often than the other skiers. But the good news is, when it came to race day and everyone was pushing themselves to the hardest point, he was so well prepared to crash that he was able to avoid crashes better than the other skiers and ultimately end up winning. This was his unique method of using failure to really propel his performance forward. And it's a great metaphor for how you think about your own life and career. If you don't experience failure, you simply won't develop the skills, the resilience, and the training that it takes to really have the courage and confidence to push forward to the next level. So with that said, page 20, I come to the summary of my little discussion today. 3 rules for bona fide extremists. Check yourself out. Ignite your magic drive, and most importantly, don't be scared of pain training. And if any of the stories I've shared with you today have been interesting, please, please go out and buy my book, Extreme You, because it is loaded with fiercely practical tips for any of you guys wanting to get more out of your own potential and super inspiring and fun stories. And that is where I leave it.
Thank you, Sarah. Those were amazing stories, and you've given us a lot to think about. I wanted to ask you, we have so many questions here, but how would you define an extremer in the simplest terms?
Yeah, I would define it as someone who is living at the edge of their own potential. So they are doing the most that they are capable of doing with their own unique skill set and passions and idiosyncrasies.
Okay, so you don't have to be an extreme sports aficionado to be an extremer.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think one of the cool things about the stories in my book is you see people of all kinds, extroverts, introverts, people in all different industries who I consider to be extremers because they are the best at what they do. They have found their own unique personality style, their own unique skills, and they're really maxing them to the best.
Okay. Now, for a lot of people, it's difficult to make a leap of faith and give up on other plans to chase their dreams. Have you ever felt doubt in your own journey, other than the examples you mentioned? And if so, how have you overcome it as an entrepreneur?
It's a great question. And yes, I have felt doubt constantly. literally a year ago, I actually quit my job and stepped into nothing except writing my book. And my God, was I terrified. Because, you know, when you've had a big career and you're constantly doing big jobs, it's so scary to step out there with nothing to go to. But really what I've done to overcome that doubt is really rely on some of those earlier experiences where, you know, things have gone wrong, but you learn that you will rebound. Like if you've been fired twice, hell, you're not terribly scared of being fired because you know you're going to survive. And so that's why I think I feel so strongly that people should really get out there and try all manner of things, because even if it's a failure or a success, either way, you're going to learn such incredibly important skills to drive you forward.
Okay. Now, you call the failure, you call it pain training.
Yeah.
What made you decide to rebrand failure in this way, and what can thinking of failure in these terms as pain training do for us?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. So one of the reasons I actually wrote the whole book was because I felt really, really upset that for particularly the younger generation living in our perfect social media world where it looks like everyone has this perfect, perfect career trajectory, that we simply weren't being honest enough and talking enough about the real stories of, you know, trouble and failure and pain training that happen on the way to great successes. And you know, I knew from my own experience, like if you Googled me like a couple of years ago, all you would see were these great accolades. And there was no mention of the terrible, you know, mistakes I made along the way. And I felt that for young people looking up, that just wasn't a fair picture. So I wanted to make a real concerted effort. And I was very lucky that all the people I interviewed for my book were willing to participate. I said, let's get out there and reframe and rebrand what success actually is all about. And let's be honest about the struggles, the failures, the mistakes, and frankly, the training that it takes to get through all those things to become the best version of you. Because then I think we can help take the stigma away from failure and hopefully encourage people to take even more risks in their own lives.
Can you share a surprising story of failure that one of your interviewees might have shared with you?
Oh, gosh. I mean,
there's
so many. Like, yeah, and it's interesting, like everything from, you know, one of my favorite stories actually was Amrita, who was she was actually a music industry executive who was like struggling along and like not even necessarily really loving her job, because deep down inside she herself was an artist and a singer, and she'd sort of tucked away those dreams and not even dealt with them. And so whether you call it a failure or a discovery, she eventually came to the realization that she needed to sort of walk away from what she was doing and throw herself into the artistic side of her. And she ended up going on to be a quite famous Bollywood artist and singer, and has created a brand around all sorts of stuff because she took the original skills that she had and combined them with her own sort of deep passion for art and music and turned herself into something different. So, you know, the failures can often propel you forward, or sometimes it's the just acceptance that what you're doing isn't where you're meant to be, and almost like the grieving that goes with walking away and trying something different.
Got it. Now, you write about the extremer movement as a counterpoint to the millennial way of life, where people are often criticized, young people are criticized for being entitled or lacking the motivation to excel. Do you think in any way we might be suppressing the talents of the millennial generation by not allowing them to explore their potential, maybe by overprotecting them or by taking a sure path rather than a risky path?
Yeah, no, I feel quite passionate about this topic because I feel like the millennial generation gets a hard rub because everyone's like, oh, they're entitled and et cetera, and they're sheltered. But in actual fact, I sort of think to myself, they just haven't necessarily been given the same tools that I know I was given being raised as a Gen Xer. And I think there's enormous amounts of passion and capability sitting in this younger generation that we have a lot of opportunity to unleash if we give them inspiration, tools, education to really get out there and sort of take some of these risks and push a little harder. Because as I say to younger audiences all the time, unfortunately, you know, we raised people culturally to believe that everyone was a winner, you know, when kids came home with participation trophies. But everyone isn't a winner, and you have to actually go to a whole different level if you want to become the best version of yourself. And I think it's all about giving people the tools and inspiration to figure that out in their own way, in their own time.
Okay. Now, what do you mean when you say that we often edit ourselves down?
Yeah, it's really interesting to me how certainly sort of corporate America has typically been a place where you have to play by a certain set of rules in order to get forward. And certainly for someone like me who's worked in really big companies, I've seen too often the situation where people are trying to sort of please the boss and do the right thing so as to keep progressing. And that may not necessarily be like pushing the company forward and taking the kind of you know, risks and bold moves that is necessary. And that is one of the things that I love about the millennial generation is that they have brought to us a whole sense of, you know, finding purpose and really being who you are at your best and making sure that you play it out to your best potential as opposed to sort of trying to tone yourself down to fit in. And I know I can speak from my own experiences of being in certain companies where I thrive because environmentally and culturally I felt I could fully be myself compared to other places where I felt I had to sort of fit in and not rock the boat. And it's very different how your performance is affected when you are fully being yourself, bringing all of you to all you do as opposed to editing yourself down to fit in.
Okay. Now, we all experience periods of stagnation or plateau, whether it's our personal lives, our fitness level, our careers.
Yeah.
How do we begin to disrupt those plateaus so that we can get extreme?
Yeah. I have a whole chapter in the book dedicated to this called Break Yourself to Make Yourself. And it's really interesting. I use the fitness metaphor, actually, of when we all find, as you just said, you know, whether you're trying to be on a weight loss program or a strength building program, you do eventually plateau. And if you keep doing the same thing, you don't get increasing results. So you actually have to change it up. Like whether it's the person who's a runner who has to change it up with weight training or the person who does a ton of yoga who has to change it up with more cardio. And that's a great metaphor for our careers and lives. Like I think we all know what it feels like when you start a new role and you're a little bit out of your depth and you don't really know exactly how to do everything and you're trying to figure it out. Fast forward a few years later, when you've really achieved mastery, you start to plateau. You're not learning as much. And I think it's up to you, the individual, to get disruptive, whether that's, you know, pushing for an assignment that gets you out of your comfort zone, whether that's, you know, as the younger generation would call it, the side hustle of, you know, volunteering to be part of an organization that stretches you and puts you in a different situation, whatever it may be to help you get uncomfortable again, because that's honestly where your growth happens. And certainly I learned from interviewing all these people for my book, every single one of them, They never got to a point of complacency. They would always go, okay, I'm doing really great, but now I've got to disrupt myself and get uncomfortable again.
Okay. Well, that is all we have time for today. You can read a lot more in the book. It is called The Extreme You by Sarah Robb O'Hagan. A reminder that today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. And if you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. Our thanks to Sarah Robb O'Hagan, and thank you all for listening.